You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
The following episode will contain the names of people and places set in the fictional world of the Hyborian Age. Furthermore, if I am unable to find these names spoken aloud on YouTube or in an audiobook, they are names that I will certainly pronounce incorrectly in almost every single instance. Listener discretion is advised. Today, our favorite Cimmerian crawls from the watery depths only to find himself plunged into the heart of Juan Tengri's seedy underbelly. In a city ruled by seven sinister wizards, Conan discovers a thieves' guild in shambles, a shepherd in peril, and a flame tower brimming with deadly secrets. Amidst fiery traps and magic-soaked treachery, Conan faces tigers, tongueless warriors, and a veiled woman whose identity will chill you to the bone. Can our steely-thewed barbarian survive this gauntlet of death and sorcery? Well, you're not going to actually have to wait that long for the answer, because we're going to be looking at Conan the Barbarian number 33, Death and Seven Wizards. That's coming up next, right here on Hither Came Conan. Welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jeweled thrones of Hyboria beneath its sneakered feet, one comic book at a time. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and every single night for the last 5 months, I have had the same dream. In the dream, I'm sitting at my computer and I'm staring at a blank Google Doc as a thunderstorm rages outside. See, I'd read Conan the Barbarian issues 33 through 38. And even had all the notes ready to record the Conan the Barbarian number 33 episode. But before I could record, I kept running into a massive brick wall. See, I was constantly finding myself either super motivated to record the episode, but with no time to do so, or I'd have great swaths of time open to record, but nothing in the way of motivation to actually make it happen. Plus, there were the roving bands of spandex-clad gnomes. You know, 3 3/4-inch tall dudes and ladies hell-bent on keeping me out of the studio. And you can't forget the ham and cheese sandwiches. So many ham and cheese sandwiches. So many. Sorry, folks. It's been a weird 5 months. And you know what? I don't really want to talk about it anymore. So back off, okay?
Wow, what a dick.
Yeah, seriously, I am, of course, trying to use humor to point out the fact that there has been no new episode of Hither Came Conan in 5 months. Well, sweeping declaration. That ends today. Is that dramatic?
Drama.
See, this is a pretty darn special episode because, I mean, I wasn't able to really gather any motivation to do really much recording over the last 5 months. So, in order to get things moving, in order to motivate myself, I decided to do what Ed and I do with the Superman Super Show, and I am live streaming this whole episode. That means that there may be times throughout the episode where I stop to answer questions from the folks who are watching live. But to be frank, if you're watching live and you do have questions, please feel free to ask. But depending on the question or questions, I may seem like I'm ignoring them, but that's only because I will ask or read your questions and answer them near the end of the show for the listener's feedback segment. For now, though, how about we get all up into the issue that we're here to discuss? Conan the Barbarian number 33. This issue sports a cover date of December 1973, though it hit the stands in September. It sold for just 20 cents, and it is entitled Death and Seven Wizards. It was written by Roy Thomas with pencils by John Buscema, inks by Ernie Chan, the letters were by John Costanza, and Glynis Ween was the colorist.
Into the boat!
Waking near a mysterious pool, our favorite barbarian Conan is rudely greeted by a beggar named Bortai, who mistakes him for a corpse ripe for plundering. Spoiler alert, folks, Conan is not dead. He's just getting started.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of their women.
After forcing Bortai to lead him away from the area, the little thief takes him through a labyrinthine cave system to the Thieves Guild hideout. Conan, a former thief himself, feels right at home amidst the rogues and ruffians. While there, Bortai spills the city's dirtiest secrets. Seven sinister wizards have seized power in Wan Tengri, overthrowing the previous king and ruling through fear and magic. Oh, and Kesar, the shepherd who smuggled Conan into the city in the previous issue, he's been captured, and he is sentenced to die. Feeling a twinge of responsibility, or maybe just looking for an excuse to flex his muscles, Conan vows to rescue him. The rescue plan involves sneaking into the Flame Tower, a fortress surrounded by mystical red flames and teeming with paranoid guards who look ready to turn on each other at the drop of a sword. After navigating underground passages, Conan and Bortai are separated. Conan finds Kesar, but it's too late. The shepherd has already met his grim end. Then, because it wouldn't be a Conan adventure without a twist, our barbarian winds up in an arena, summoned as the guest of honor by the seven wizards. For their amusement, the wizards throw everything at Conan. Tigers, men, and a masked beauty who turns out to be no ordinary opponent. When Conan removes her veil, he comes face to face with death herself. A fight that's bound to test even the Sumerian's legendary mettle. All right, so this is the second of the three-part tale that, like I said in the previous episode, is based on the short novel Flame Winds by Norval W. Page, a novel that I remind you that is not a Conan story, but a Prester John story. Now, Roy didn't have much to say about the issue in his book, Barbarian Life, a Literary Biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1, or at least he doesn't have a lot to say that I found all that interesting. Actually, that's not true. He does point out a few bits in this issue that he had changed from what Page had originally written in his book, Flame Winds. But I kind of want to do a comparison between the comic story and Page's original version, probably in the next episode once the story is complete. And I have then actually read Page's version, which I think I said in the last episode, I'm not going to read Page's version until I'm done reading the comic book version because I don't want to be spoiled, I guess. So, yeah.
Steven's a genius.
So, yeah, this bit here, this segment of the episode in which I typically fill your ear holes with a big bunch of behind the scenes info, that's going to be pretty short. How short is it going to be? Well, considering that we've reached the end, that's how short it's going to be. So, yeah, get your affairs in order, prepare your mind hole, because we are about to dive. So we'll start with the cover. It was penciled by Herb Trimpe and ink by John Romita. This is actually something from Roy's book that I can share. Roy actually had no recollection in regard to why the cover to this issue was done by Herb Trimpe and not either Gil Kane, who had done the last few covers, or John Buscema, who, as we know, was, of course, penciling the book. All he could say in his book was that maybe Gil turned in a cover or a sketch and that maybe it sucked. And so with Herb and John Romita working at Marvel at the time, the job was just given to them to put a cover together.
Face it, Tiger. You just hit the jackpot.
Like I said, not a lot of riveting behind-the-scenes stuff for the issue. But, yeah, the cover. It's, for me, this is a fairly crowded cover. Conan is standing in an arena. Behind him, there is a woman who's half-naked because it's a Conan book, but she's got big billowy sleeves and some kind of weird helmet on her head. And she's a small figure. She's in the middle of the cover, but she's in the background standing on a wall. So it almost looks like she's standing on Conan's shoulder. If you're watching live, you can see the cover. But she's standing on this wall and she's yelling, "Cimmerian, to win the priestess, to save your own life, you must face the gauntlet of the seven deaths." And Conan, he's standing there facing the reader, facing the camera, and he's got a sword in each hand. And between him, so he's like in the mid ground. The lady is in the background, and then in the foreground are seven warriors of some sort. They're colorized. They're all color coded. There's a red one and a yellow one and a blue one and a purple one and a green one and I guess orange. I don't know what that other color is, but they are, there's like three of them on one side, four of them on the other side. They're creating basically an aisle down the center of the cover, and then standing right dead center in that aisle is Conan holding his swords, and he's responding to the lady on the wall behind her by saying, "Then face it, I shall." Because he's a badass. He's a bad dude. It's a crowded, for me, it's very crowded. There's a lot going on, and it's only because there's so many people on the cover that it makes me a little antsy when I look at it. I don't like seeing all that happening on the cover. And then the choice to give it a white background, I actually like that. But yeah, it's not one of my favorite covers. We get into the book, and the first thing we have is one of these fun famous name prizes or cash ads, where I don't know, I never signed up for this kind of stuff, but apparently you sold things and you win prizes based on how much you sold. I didn't like selling stuff. All right, we get to the first page of the story, and in the previous issue number 32, it ended with Conan following that woman into the pool inside that dude's house. Was the guy's name here on this first page? I don't remember. I don't remember what that dude's name was. But the woman he followed in the pool, you know, she was like, "Hey, big boy, why don't you come into the pool and see me sometime?" And so he's like, "I'm getting a sexy reward." And so he goes into the pool with her and follows her deep under the house or whatever it is. And she turns into a freaking sea monster with tentacles, and he manages to escape. And the previous issue ends with him pulling himself out of this pool, the other side of the pool, which is now outside. It's like a courtyard outside the guy's house. But Conan pulls himself out of the pool. Conan pulls himself out of the pool and collapses on his face right there at the side of the pool. And he is covered in these red welts from all the suction cups there on on the freaking sea creature, the octopus lady monster from the previous issue. But the last thing you see in the previous issue as he's laying there unconscious is some dude comes out of the shadows, climbs down from the roof of the house, and we assume that he's going to kill Conan. And so this is, you know, it's a kind of a cliffhanger ending. And so this is how we see that, I guess, play out. So this guy that creeps out of the shadows and comes up to Conan, his name's Bortai. He's a local. He assumed that Conan was dead, so he had just come to pick his pockets, basically. And so he is crouched over him, and he sees a pouch, a purse of some sort, tucked into the back of Conan's belt. And he's pretty happy about that. This is we also get this. This is our title page, this first page. So we get the title, Death and Seven Wizards. Tells us that it was freely adapted from the novel Flame Winds by Norval W. Page, and it was used by permission of Condé Nast, who is the copyright holders. So he turned the page. Like I said, Bortai has crouched over the prone form of Conan. Bortai thinks that Conan is dead. He's about to sneak this purse out from under Conan's belt. He actually does grab the purse out from under his belt, because when you turn the page, we learn that Conan is very much alive. He has sprung into action and has reached out to grab Bortai's wrist the wrist of the hand that is clutching the purse and forces him to drop the purse. And this is where Conan starts calling him Monkey Face, which not a big fan, not a big fan of that that moniker, that nickname that he gives Bortai here. But they start arguing. Basically, Conan's like, "Hey, you tried to steal from me," and Bortai's, "Oh no, man, I thought you were dead. I was just checking to see if he was okay. I just wanted to make sure you was all right. I had to move the purse of money so I could check your pulse and stuff, dude. It's okay." But they don't really get too deep into the argument before Bortai points out to Conan that suddenly the courtyard is filled with soldiers. These are the soldiers that had been chasing Conan in the previous issue, and now they've caught up to him. And so Bortai and Conan beat feet. Bortai leads him out of this courtyard. They climb up a wall, and Bortai learns that Conan is just as fleet an expert. He's just as fleet of a climber. I don't know how I wanted to say that. He's a damn good climber, basically. We know that about Sumerians. But they manage to get over the wall as the soldiers are firing arrows at them. But they manage to escape. Bortai leads him into the underground caverns. The whole time, actually, because when we turn the page, they're kind of sneaking through town. And if you remember from the previous issue, as the sun was setting for the night, the flame winds would start speaking to everybody and tell them that they needed to be inside the gates within 1 minute or something. You know, if they were caught outside the gates after a certain time, they'd die or whatever. And when Conan steals somebody's purse, the flame winds call out, "Hey, we got a thief over here, folks. He's over here. Look, hey, everybody, come get him. He's a thief." But it's basically like a magical PA system, public address system for the town. But with this issue, the Bortai and Conan, they escape from these guards, and we hear at least once before they get underground, the flame winds call out that apparently everyone who's not one of the seven wizards, the flame winds consider a slave, because it calls everybody slaves. But it says,
"Wait, slaves, wait for your betters."
So Bortai takes Conan underground. Conan learns that Bortai is part of a local thieves guild. The rest of the members of the thieves guild are down there, but they are very poor. They're dressed in rags. They're forced to live underground because these wizards, you know, one of the things that they do is there's seven of them. And because we learn here real quick after we get if we turn the page and we get a ad for a bunch of iron-ons, which was a thing back then. We got to keep on trucking iron-on. Looks like there's a Popeye. Let's see. Captain America. Yamaha. There's a frog at some point. I don't know what the frog means. Incredible Hulk. I think that's a Sean Cassidy. Good Lord. Spider-Man. But turn the page again. Still not back in the story. Now we have a ad for the old Charles Atlas ads. Those are great. Turn the page one more time. We're back into the story. And this is where Bortai tells Conan the story. This is how Juan Tangri has gotten to where it is now. And I wanted to tell that bit before I talk about why the Thieves Guild here in Juan Tangri do not seem to be very, I can't think of the word that I want to say. They're not doing a very good job of going out there and earning that cheddar.
Life ain't nothing but bitches and money.
So then we turn the page again, and Bortai is telling Conan basically the story of the seven wizards, how they came to Juan Tangri and why they rule now. There was a king in Juan Tangri at one point. Juan Shi was his name. He was also a sorcerer. But one day, these seven wizards show up in town. Bortai has no idea where they came from. They just kind of appeared one day. It was the seventh day, apparently. The seventh day in the seventh month, and they showed up each in robes of a different color, seven colors.
Think of the colors!
So these seven wizards each wearing robes of a different color, seven colors. They show up in Wan Tengri one day, and they turn the king, Wan Shi, into a pile of scattered ashes, is what how Bortai describes it. Then these wizards build the flame tower, and Bortai says that the
far-darting fires fall with lethal fury on any caught outside the gates after nightfall.
So seven wizards come in, kill the king, build a tower that's basically there to burn people to ash if they don't follow the rules, ultimately. And this is now life in Wan Tengri. And what we learn here is that the seven wizards like to go out into the town. They just like to go out and hang out with folks, see what's going on. They do it undercover boss style, where they go in disguise so they can just go out there and hang out and see how everything's going and spy on people and junk. And so when they do that, of course, the thieves in town don't know that it's one of these seven wizards walking around. They just see somebody walking around town with a big fat purse of gold hanging from their belt. And so they steal from them and then get it back to their headquarters. And the gold disappears because the wizards have this freaking spell or something that they put on all their valuables, so that if somebody steals it from them, it disappears and returns back to that wizard. We also learn here that the king of Wan Tengri, Wan Shi, who is now dead, burned into a pile of ashes, he had a daughter, but the seven wizards have imprisoned her in the flame tower. And Bortai points out,
they say she is very beautiful and perhaps a sorceress as well. But of course, she cannot fight all the seven, so there she remains.
Conan, who is sitting on the ground at this point, drinking out of a bowl, he's curious. How does Bortai know so much about what happened? And Bortai tells him that he stole into a temple and a god whispered certain secrets into his ear. And to show that he's telling the truth, he swears by his mother's mustache. Ha ha! A woman with a mustache. Yeah, Roy, he's funny. So the story now has been told of who these seven wizards are. Conan has eaten, or he's had a bowl full of broth, but he's done for the night. And he finds a bed somewhere within these caverns, and he passes out.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Hello there. Come on in and welcome to the Fantastic Four. I am your host, Brett Young, and this is the podcast serving up comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. Every episode, I'll welcome a guest to the Fantastic Lounge to explore one of their favorite comic book characters and cover a classic story in which they're featured. What pairs better with great literature than a delicious drink? Based on my guest's ingredient of choice, we'll mix up a cocktail or mocktail to enjoy in the Fantastic Lounge while we talk comics, mixology, history, and whatever else comes to mind. So join me every month for the Fantastic Pour, open for business by the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Earth-shattering disasters, strange sports stories, five-star superhero spectacular. What do all these titles have in common? Well, they're all Bronze Age DC Comics, of course, but they are all also special. My name is Paul Kien, and I'm the host of the new podcast, DC Specialcast. In the 1970s, DC Comics published a number of catch-all titles, like DC Special, DC Special Series, DC Superstars, and others. These comics varied wildly in content, quality, and even format. Each episode, I will be joined by a guest to explore one of these special comics. So join me for DC Specialcast, coming in 2025, only on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
And he's laying there on this bed, clutching his sword. The thieves are watching him at one point. But something I think that's kind of important here, because it touches back to something that happened in the first issue. So if you remember from issue one with Skarkosh, the sorcerer, I can't remember his name, but he had this gem that showed everybody in this cavern where Skarkosh was hiding out, showed everybody the past, present, and future of the world that they're living in. And during this crazy fantasy sequence that freaked out a couple of the Vannermen, we see Conan as an adult, because I think he's 18 or 20 when the series starts. But we learn that he becomes a king at some point in his future. And so every once in a while, as these issues have gone on, if he ends up in a town where the monarch has died, he wonders, is this where I'm gonna be a king? And as he's falling asleep, he starts to wonder that about Juan Tengri. Is this where it's gonna happen? Is he gonna kill some wizards and become the king of Juan Tengri? He doesn't become the king. I haven't read the third part yet, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't become king of Juan Tengri. But he sleeps through the night. He's a very light sleeper. They point that out, that none of the thieves messed with him, because they know that they can sense that if they went over to try to mess with him, that he would be awake in an instant, and he's holding the sword, and he would cut them all down and kill him, because he's Conan and he's a badass. But Conan finally wakes up and learns, to his delight, and I'm sure to the artist's delight as well, all the welts have now been healed. They're no longer on Conan's skin. He hears something going on outside in some of the bigger caverns. The people are whispering. Obviously, they're excited about something. There's something good or bad has happened. And Conan follows the sound out and learns that Kassar, the shepherd who smuggled Conan into Juan Tengri in the previous issue, he has been captured. Not only captured, but taken to the Flame Tower. So Conan, of course, Conan's got a code. Kassar helped him. I probably should have done a previously on thing at the beginning of the episode. But if you remember from the previous issue, the whole reason Conan is here in Juan Tengri is that he has been sent by his captain in Agrippur, because Conan is now a mercenary. He's working for the Prince, King Yezdegerd. The Prince is Yezdegerd. I'm freaking out. But Conan is sent to Juan Tengri to reconnoiter, check the place out, see if it's ripe for invasion, because of course the Hyrkanians are spreading out and they're trying to expand their empire. So Kassar helps Conan by smuggling him in the city. He couldn't do the job that he was given without, he needed Kassar to do it. And so Kassar now needs him. And there's also, because one of the things he says, because one of the thieves points out that the thief says, they've already arrested Kassar, the sheepherd who smuggled him in and taken him to the Flame Tower. And by smuggled him in, of course, he's talking about Conan. So this is what Conan comes in and he hears. And Conan basically says that no man will die in his place. The reason that they have arrested Kassar, the reason that they have taken him to the Flame Tower, the reason they're going to kill him is because he smuggled Conan into the city. And so as far as Conan's concerned, this guy is going to die in Conan's place. And Conan will not allow that. And he even says, by Crom, I'll free him if I have to tear down the Flame Tower itself. Which he doesn't do in this issue. He does not actually tear down the Flame Tower. He might in the next one. Pretty cool to see. He does do a couple of cool things in this. We'll get to it. The next page is like the there used to basically be classified ads in comic books back in the day, because they just rent little, you know, people could rent just these small spaces out. So there's just these, just this weird collection of ads. Let's see, what's this one? Yeah, I'm not going to go through all of them, but there's, you can learn karate. You can send a thing in to learn karate. You can learn how to hypnotize people, their x-ray specs, that kind of stuff. The next page is also an ad, and it's for the magazine Grit, which I never sold, but it was also one of the things, if you signed up to be, you know, teenagers would sign up to sell this magazine Grit, and they could, you know, depending on how much they sold, they could win prizes, basically. I hated selling stuff. I hated it.
Hated it.
So back into the story, Bortai has agreed to take Conan to the Flame Tower. They don't want him to go at first. Bortai does not want him to go. The Thieves Guild has kind of very quickly decided that, you know, they're in rough shape. They can't steal stuff. But here's this outsider, this big muscular barbarian who so far has been kicking a lot of ass and is not, you know, the wizards and the Flame Winds have done jack shit to Conan. And these thieves are starting to think that maybe Conan is supposed to be there to take over the Thieves Guild and pull them out of, here we go. Ready? There it goes. Here it goes. They're hoping that he will pull them out of poverty and place them into posterity. Not posterity. That's not right. Posterity. I don't freaking care.
The word you're looking for is prosperity.
Anyway, eventually Bortai agrees to take Conan into town and guide him into the Flame Tower. As they're going through town, after you skip a bunch of pages that have nothing to do with the story, they used to do this thing back then. If you're looking at the original comic, I'm looking at page 10, and underneath that final panel, you get a piece of text that says continued after next page. So the next page is the Hyborian page. It's a letter, the letters page. But then there are two pages of ads, one for Formula One racer car toys, and then one for a drafting kit for, you know, if you want to be a drafts person, drafter, which I took drafting in high school. I had my own drafting kit that was old and used that we bought from the school. Anyway, that takes us into a double page spread, this really great double page spread, because basically what's happening here in this issue is that Conan is being led to a tower to rescue somebody who has been imprisoned by wizards. And he starts to realize that a lot of the adventures he's been getting into recently have to deal with towers, wizards, and or some kind of weird, crazy monster. And so I don't remember the issue numbers off the top of my head. And had I been a smarter man, I would have looked all that up beforehand and put it in the notes. But there's the issue where he fights the winged man, dark skinned winged man in the tower. There's the issue that, you know, they that's part of this double page spread. There's the issue where he has to go up against the cult with the giant bat. That I think there was a tower involving there. Of course, the Tower of the Elephant. They make reference to that, and the God in the Bowl, which didn't have a tower in it, but it did have a wizard, because Thoth Amon was tangentially involved in that story. And we also get to see the bit at the end of the story arc that had Red Sonja in it, and she had come to the city under the guise, this Hyrcanian city, under the guise of protecting it. But she was actually there to steal something out of a tower that was a magical item. And
I'm sorry, I forgot what I was going to say. What was I saying?
So back to the story. On the way to the Flame Tower, Bortai actually takes Conan on a bit of a detour. He wants him to look over. He basically takes him to another building up onto the roof so Conan can look down, or as much down onto the Flame Tower as he can. I think the Flame Tower is the tallest building in town. But he can see down into the courtyard. And one of the things he sees is row upon row of warriors. Each row of warrior is dressed in armor, of a certain color, and that color corresponds with their wizard. So you got green warriors with the green wizard, blue warriors for the blue wizard, that kind of stuff. But basically what we're looking at down here in the courtyard is, so each wizard has their own fighting force. They have their own army, basically, their own secret police, their own armed guards. And you know which group of soldiers belongs to which wizard because, again, they're all color coordinated. Well, using the idea, I guess, of a nuclear deterrent, where the reason why Russia and America didn't go to war all those years is because nobody wanted to launch their nukes, because they knew that if America launched, Russia's just going to launch theirs, everybody's going to die. So if everybody's got nukes, nobody's going to use them, right? That's kind of what they're doing here. But it's like, you've got, so front and center of this last panel on page 16, you've got two rows of warriors. Each row consists of six warriors. And the funny thing is that they all looked, it's not just that they're wearing the same armor. So the warriors for the green wizard, they're all wearing the same armor, which makes sense. It's like a stormtrooper would, but they all have the same haircut. They don't actually all have the same beards. This guy didn't have a beard at all. And so, of course, it makes them all look alike. And then the blue warriors, they're actually facing off against the blue warriors. They all have the same blue bits of armor and the same top knots. And they look like they're all clones, basically. But they're all just standing there facing each other, each one with their sword drawn and the tip of the blade at the opposing soldier's neck. And they're just frozen like that. And so that's their nuclear deterrent. There you can see more rows of different colored soldiers in other areas behind them and stuff. And so these wizards don't like each other. They don't trust each other. They're working together because it brings them each, you know, a bit of power. That's what it's all about, power and money.
Life ain't nothing but bitches and money.
But they don't trust each other because they're evil. And of course, the one thing that, you know, the big theme with a lot of fantasy books and movies and whatnot is that evil will eventually turn on itself. And that's the advantage that the good guys will always have. But here, they're literally just constantly at each other's throats, so much so that they have to have all their soldiers out there just literally standing there with their swords to each other's throats, ready to just start killing at a moment's notice, just in case, you know, shit starts to kick off. So Conan's looking at all this from up above, and after he kind of takes it all in, they go down to the ground. It looks like they're in kind of the yard of a church, maybe, and there's a secret door in the ground, in the grass, and they're back underground, and they're able to get into the flame tower from beneath. But once they're underground, they're basically in this, like, just a labyrinth of just tunnel system, basically. And Conan is commenting on that, and he turns around to see how Bortai reacts, and he learns that Bortai's no longer there. And he hears Bortai calling to him. Once he discovers Bortai's gone, he hears Bortai calling to him from like the top of the staircase, still underground. But he's you see this word bubble floating down.
Up here, master, up here quickly.
But Conan, he immediately says,
"Is that your voice, Monkey Face? I think not. But it was a voice, at least. So I'll follow where it leads and take my chances with torch and with broadsword."
Because he's holding a torch in one hand, and he's got a broadsword in the other hand. Basically, what this looks like, the way that the word balloon is drawn, the way it's been designed, this with Bortai calling out,
"Up here, master, up here, quickly."
It looks like the word balloons that they would use whenever the voice of the flame tower would call out. And Conan, he doesn't quite believe that it's Bortai's voice. And I think it's because he recognizes it as the voice of the flame tower.
I know that voice.
So William Dahlstead points out in the live chat, in regard to the seven wizards and the whole nuclear deterrent argument I just used, he points out
pothole. Seven wizards, odd number. who does that seventh set of warriors square off against?
That's a good question. I can only assume that each of the seven armies are so big that when they are split into six-member groups to stand up against six members of the other group, that they're able to just intermix all the, you know, it works out mathematically. I don't know how, but somehow it does. So Conan is by himself now at this point. He's got the torch and the sword, and he just keeps investigating. He keeps exploring. He hears the voice again.
Here, master, this way.
And Conan's response to this voice that he knows is not Bortai, he says,
just point me the way to your throat, whoever you are.
Again, because Conan kicks ass. But everything goes dark. Conan's kind of feeling his way along, and he comes across a dead man. The lights just suddenly boom back on. The room is suddenly erupted in fire, torches, and he learns that the dead person that he has come across is Kasar, and he is basically chained, spread eagle, to a big stone slab, and he is covered in black blood because, again, Comics Code Authority is like, hey, you want to squirt blood all over the place? You want to see blood shooting out? You know, you want to cut off somebody's arm and have blood shooting out of it? That's fine. It just can't be red, which is just dumb.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
I mean, it's no wonder this was around the time when the Comics Code Authority was, they were getting less and less strict. They were kind of just losing their power, basically. And I think a lot of creators around this time were starting to just kind of test those boundaries. And then within the Comics Code Authority, some of those people are,
it's all right. That's a lot of blood on that page, but it's black. It's cool.
Whereas somebody else might be like,
it's a lot of blood on that page. I know it's black, but it's very obviously gallons of blood that have been splashed all over everything. You guys have to fix that.
But I just find that kind of stuff kind of interesting. So Conan, like I said, he stumbles into this room. Everything is dark. He stumbles across a dead body. The room erupts into light. The dead body is Kasar. He's laying on his back, spread eagle, chained to a big stone slab, like someplace where you would sacrifice somebody. But then when we turn the page, we notice that it's not just a room. This is the arena. And surrounding him are seven segments of these bleachers, basically. And each segment is a different color. And within that segment, the wizard and the little wizard minions of each color is sitting there. And then all their soldiers are sitting there. Once the lights come on and Conan realizes where he is, the seven wizards aren't actually there yet. That's the point that they make their entrance, their big entrance. They come out as a group, the seven of them, and then they all split up and take a seat within their little areas. And then the voice of the Flame Winds calls out again.
Ah, you are ready, great ones? Then let the games begin.
Something about that fills Conan with an icy fear, and the voice continues.
Now, barbarian, hear the judgment of the seven. You shall wage three battles ere the dawn breaks without, and you shall win honor or death.
We got another classified ad section of the comic. I'm not seeing any in this one, but some of the very earlier issues of Conan, there you'd get to one of these pages and suddenly you'd realize that there someplace was trying to sell Nazi memorabilia. So that's fun.
Fucking Nazis.
But there's an ad here to be a locksmith. Go to a locksmithing institute. There's an ad to get free, powerful muscles fast. Looks like there's a place that you can mail to get back issue comic books in Hollywood, California. This is where I would normally see a Mile High Comics ad, but I'm not seeing any in this one, or at least on this page. Here's an ad. I'm going to read this ad to you. The headline to the ad is just simply,
be taller.
And the ad reads,
would you spend 35 cents to discover how to stand 2 to 6 inches taller in a few short weeks? For all ages, no gimmicks. send 35 cents to Tall Up, Box 23, Athens, Ohio, 45701.
Fun. Hey, you learn how to play guitar here as well. Got another page of ads to, for one to be a veterinary assistant, or at least learn how to become a veterinary assistant, as well as a zookeeper. There's an ad for a newspaper, the Menominee Falls Gazette, Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, which features the weekly comic strip Tarzan. That's kind of fun. There's an ad where you can learn the right way to throw a destructive power punch. That's fun. And then we get back to the story, and Conan faces his first trial with the Flamewind voice telling him,
"The first of your struggles shall be the Battle of the Beast."
Tiger, a big pair of doors, big pair of wooden doors open up. A tiger comes out. Conan is standing against this tiger with just a sword. I haven't even mentioned that he didn't have any shoes on either. I'm assuming he took them off before he got into the pool in the previous issue. I don't remember, but yeah, he's not even wearing any shoes or boots. But he's clutching the sword. The tiger leaps at him, and suddenly the sword turns into a snake, which he throws at the tiger. As the snake connects with the tiger, which is leaping at Conan, it leaps atop him. Conan struggles with it, but it does end up bringing him to the ground. But as they hit the ground, the thing dies, and Conan is able to roll it off of him. And he sees that the reason it died is it's got his sword in its side. So the snake, sword turned into a snake. He threw the snake at the tiger. The snake hit the tiger, turned back into a sword, and killed him. The narration during this part, I really quite enjoyed the narration during this part because, well, I'll just read it to you. This is happening as the tiger is facing Conan. The tiger leaps at Conan. Conan's sword turns into a snake. This is the narration that's happening as this is all going on.
5 seconds. On a strand just that thick does a man's life hang. In the first second, great striped haunches bunch and mighty thews grow tense. In the second, a streak of golden roaring lightning crackles as man faces man-eater there in the simmering torchlight. In the third, an upraised sword becomes magically a venomous serpent in his fist.
And of course, you have to point out that as when Conan realizes he's not holding a sword, he's holding a snake, what does he say? Everybody say it with me.
Crom.
I need to start saying that. I'm always like, Jesus Christ. I just need to be saying Crom. It sounds, makes me feel like a poser though. All right, back to the narration. So we've had the first 3 seconds.
In the fourth, the barbarian hurls the writhing, sharp-fanged thing from him. Whether as a weapon or in fear, no man can tell.
Turn the page. We're on page 23. Narration continues as the tiger collides with Conan and starts pulling him to the ground.
And then the fatal fifth second. The one which seems to last an endless eternity as 500 pounds of Vendaya-spawned fury crash with world-shattering force against Conan's northborn frame and bear it heavily to the arena floor, only to collapse in a sixth and final second, a sliver of steel jutting from its side.
So Conan's had the first of his three tests. He fought a tiger with a sword that turned into a snake and then back into a sword again. And on page 23 here, the very final panel, actually, the bottom row of panels, it's two panels, because the last panel there is Conan, he's swinging his head around to like look at the camera, basically. And it's a really good, I really like that image. Every once in a while, John Buscema, who's already an excellent artist, he takes it up just a bit further. And I like that kind of stuff.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
It is a world transformed, where things are not what they seem.
Transformers!
Want to learn a bit about the Transformers? Think you know everything about Cybertron, but are looking to learn a little bit more? Enroll today at Transformers University Podcast. Each episode, we'll tackle a piece of Transformers history, starting in 1984 and marching our way up to today. Hosted by me, Anthony Brucalli, three-time Emmy Award winner and consulting producer on Netflix's The Toys That Made Us, and lifelong Transformers fan, we'll go on a journey through cartoons and comics, toys and movies, and all the weird esoterica from around the world, chronicling the adventures of everyone's favorite, Robots in Disguise. Listen to Transformers University on iTunes, Google, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Transform and roll out!
According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. So check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
So as this page is coming to an end, something has happened to make Conan jerk his head around, right? We don't get to see what that is right away because we got another page of ads with a werewolf mask, weighted wristlets. You can buy a smoke cloud, another muscle book, Muscles of Steel, another place you can learn karate, joy buzzers, onion gum, a lot of fun stuff. Ooh, and a Raquel Welch pillow.
And have Raquel Welch. Dropped on top of me.
Dropped on top of you.
Oh yes, not calmly.
She's got a big bottom.
After that is an ad for, what is this for? North American School of Conservation. So you can, I guess, join this society and you'll get a badge to show that you are a conservationist. And you'll get free facts about exciting outdoor careers, like in the Wildlife Service and the Fisheries Service. Professional hunter. Heck yeah. All right, so we get back to the story and we learn what Conan is turning to see with such, you know, like he's ready to just start throwing down. Something has surprised him. And we see it's these soldiers, the wizard's soldiers. So there's just seven of them, one for each color, that are there to face off against Conan. And then behind them is that woman that's on the cover with the weird helmet.
Nice hat!
But now we see that she's wearing a veil covering her face. So she's half naked. And you're like, look at her. She looks pretty good. But she's got a veil covering her face. That can't be good, right? So she is back behind them. And now she's talking. And she's the one who's explaining what's going on now. What this is the second contest. And she tells them how it's going to work.
Win your way to me, O man, and I shall pillow thy weary head and give thee dreamless sleep. But first, you must pass through the gauntlet of the seven deaths.
And that's these seven soldiers. And I'm assuming I don't think it says here, but I would assume if there's seven of them, one from each color, these are the toughest guys. They're the best warriors, I guess. I don't know, maybe. But they start doing battle with Conan. The red one or the scarlet one goes first. He comes at Conan. The guy's got armor and a sword and a shield who's fighting Conan. And Conan, of course, is in his little skorts and no shoes and a sword. But of course, he swings at this guy, hits his shield and just cracks his shield in half and then immediately sticks the guy in the gut and kills him. Doing so, we turn the page, page 27. He doesn't. This is such a Conan thing to do. It's not enough to stab the guy through the gut. He picks the guy up by the sword. He's the sword is in the guy's stomach. It's coming out of his back now. And he picks the guy up, two hands on the handle of the sword. He's doing that because the green soldier and the yellow soldier are charging at him, and he throws this corpse at them. And as he's doing so, he mentions how happy he is that the sword is not turning into a snake. So red guy, red soldier's dead. He knocked over the green and the yellow soldier with the red soldier's corpse.
Well, that got dark.
The other four then surround him. And we kind of learn here, because the narration points out that, you know, the advantage that Conan has, other than the fact that he's a badass and he knows how to fight and he's very skilled. These other soldiers, like I said, they're all wearing armor and Conan is basically naked. Because of that, Conan is more mobile. He's more agile. He can duck in and out. He can, you know, juke and jive and all that stuff. And he does that as the other four soldiers come at him. They surround him. And so he's just jumping around. He's like Yoda in the Attack of the Clones fighting Count Dooku. It's like he's just flipping around. And at the final panel on page 7, the previous panel, he's leaped up into the air as one of the soldiers tried to cut his legs out from under him. And as he's coming down, he plants one of his bare feet square in the face of the blue soldier. The next page, page 30 at this point, he's still in battle with these seven soldiers. And there's a really great moment here where the coloring is not great. If you're looking at this on the video, you can see the coloring is not great. I can see, obviously, the first panel here on page 30. I guess that's the yellow guy that Conan has just stabbed in the gut. Blue guy's laying on the ground. Red guy's laying on the ground. Conan, basically, it's like he rams into the guy. Like if Conan was a football player and he was in his three-point stance, he just rammed into the guy. But he also stabbed him in the gut with his sword at the same time. So his momentum causes the yellow guy to start falling back, and Conan falls with him, flips over him, lands on his back. The sword comes out of the guy's body. That's the third panel on this page. The sword has come out of the guy's body as Conan lands on his back, and there's a stream of blood connecting the body to the tip of the sword, which is really cool. Conan's laying there on his back, fourth panel of the page. And he can see two of the soldiers are charging him now, one coming at his feet, the other coming at his head. He then swings his legs up and grabs the guy coming at his feet, grabs him around the neck, wraps his legs, his ankles around the guy's neck, and throws the guy into the other dude, the guy that was charging at his head. And then Conan, this is all happening in one page. It's the best page of this entire issue. Second to the last panel, Conan pulls himself to his feet, jumps into the air, lands on those two guys on his knees. It's like you can't really see where he hits the other guy, one of the guys, but it's very clear he's coming down on the guy's neck, the front of his neck, his throat with his knee. And so those two guys are dead. There are two soldiers, however, that still remain, the green soldier and the yellow soldier. It's Zorath has commented,
"Best Conan material on YouTube. Let's go."
I like "let's go." My son says that all the time. Let's go. I'll text him, "Hey, you want to go see a movie? Let's go." That's his response. All right. So the yellow soldier and the green soldier are the only ones that are still alive. The yellow wizard, not the yellow wizard, that was stupid. The green wizard stands and calls out,
"Slay the outlander, warrior mine, and you with him, man of gold, else long shall be your torments upon the altars of midnight. Or have you forgotten the long ago night when you pledged your devotion to the seven with tongues which now lie shriveled in the tower of the flame winds?"
That's right. These soldiers don't have any tongues. Conan had wondered at one point why these guys were being quiet, which is kind of weird because I feel like I know there was an issue earlier. Which one was that? It's the one with the stone. Conan is out. He's heading west finally, and he comes across a woman, a Kitai woman, and like a guy with her who doesn't talk. He's just this big barrel-shaped Kitan man. I know that when Conan fought that guy, Conan, they mention in the narration that the guy doesn't make any noise when Conan fights him, and Conan's fight, you know, the Sumerian way is not to boast and call out and whatnot when you're fighting. It's just to get down to business. And so that's the way Conan liked it. But I feel like he's almost kind of, I can't find where it says it, but I feel like when I reread this last night, that there's a bit where Conan feels kind of like it's off-putting that these guys aren't saying anything. And then we learn that they don't have any tongues. But the yellow guy and the green guy, the Power Rangers, that are coming after Conan. And so Conan throws his sword at the yellow guy with such strength and force that it goes through his shield into his chest and out his back and kills him. But now he doesn't have a sword. He's got one guy left, but he doesn't have a sword. The green guy comes at him. He tries to stick Conan with the sword. Conan ducks under it, picks the guy up, and slams him head first into the ground. So that guy's dead. That, I think, is the, you know, there's a part of me that's always creeped out when shows and whatnot go, oh, it's the best kill of the issue, or the best kill of the episode, the best kill of the movie. But I'm a hypocrite. That was the best kill of the issue. Anyway, so Conan wins. He's bested the first contest by killing the tiger. And now he's won the second contest by killing the seven soldiers. And he calls out, you know, hey, I won. Give me my prize. I want the lady because she's hot. And so he starts climbing the steps, and the woman with the veil is calling out to him.
Go claim your prize, at least, barbarian. Yes, warrior, come to me for thy reward. My hair has the fragrance of myrrh, and I shall sing thee sweet and endless songs.
Conan points out that her voice is very musical, but as he approaches her, being Conan, this is totally something Conan would do. The first thing he does is he rips the veil off of her face. And we see that her face is a skull. She is death. Death is betrayed in the... betrayed? Death is portrayed in the Marvel Universe as a woman with a skull face. And that's who this is. And she actually says it. It's not that we as Marvel readers are, oh, I bet that's the same death that's in the main Marvel Universe. But he rips the veil off of her face, calls out,
Mother of Mitra,
when he sees the skull, and she has a little speech to give him as the issue ends.
You are a fool, Sumerian. If you had let me caress you, you would have drowned in easy forgetfulness, painless nothingness. But now you'll suffer before you know the final piece of blessed oblivion. Do you not remember, O man? The Flame Wind spoke of three battles. The Battle of the Beast you've won, and the Battle of the Men. The Flame Wind whispered that you would win either honor or death. And I am death!
She actually doesn't cackle, but I felt like it needed a cackle. And that's how the issue ends. You get at the very bottom. Next, Fury in the Flame Tower. And then we get an ad for more muscles.
Gain weight, be muscular and admired.
It's Hercules 2. Is that what this is called? Yeah.
Yes, you too can have a body like Mr. Perfect Physique Saul. He followed our Hercules 2 muscle building course.
Whatever. It sounds like a lot of work. So yeah, it's a fun story. I had a lot of fun with it. The first part, issue 32, wasn't as good as this one. And so when I finished issue 32, I just kind of wasn't all that as excited to get into the next two issues. But I really enjoyed this one. This was a fun one. I liked seeing Conan just be Conan. He just kicks a lot of ass in this issue. And I always like seeing that kind of stuff. And I like it when they come up with new and interesting ways for him to just throw people around and kick ass. That always makes me happy for some reason. So what did y'all think? Did you like this issue? Did I fail to mention something? Did I get it all right? Let me know. Send an email to feedback@hithercameconan.com. And who knows, maybe I'll read it out on a future episode.
Everybody out.
Next time on Hither Came Conan, Death herself tests our Sumerian's mettle in a blood-soaked arena, only to restore him with the secret to unmask Juan Tengri's hidden power. Beneath the looming flame tower, Conan and Bortai fight Lion and Sentry, free a captive princess, and ignite a citywide revolt against the Seven Wizards, only for the princess's magic to snatch back his treasure and transform his grand ship into a leaky skiff. Will Conan survive this sorceress betrayal and reclaim his spoils? Find out next time as we grapple with Conan the Barbarian number 34, The Temptress in the Tower of Flame, published in October of 1973. The synopsis used in this episode was taken from MarvelFandom.com and then altered, twisted, rewritten, and added to by me. The information used in this episode comes from Wikipedia, along with Mike's Amazing World of Comics at Mike'sAmazingWorld.com, and the book Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1 by Roy Thomas, which you can get now at SumerianPress.com. And finally, the views and opinions expressed within this episode are mine and mine alone, and they do not reflect the official policy or position of Marvel Comics, Roy Thomas, the Howard Estate, Conan, his sword, his steely thews, his many fans and supporters, and especially his god, Crom.
Crom laughs with the four winds.
So until next time, folks, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and as always, be nice to each other. Bye. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback at hithercameconan.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Stephen or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Hither Came Conan and every other show under the Stephen or Else Media umbrella early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes, or just go to hithercameconan.com to sign up today. Hither Came Conan is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out somanypodcasts.com. All links will be in the show notes. I want to say hi real quick to some of the folks who are watching live. William Dalsted, It's Zoraf, and Grimdark Half Off. Thank you for joining me. I may do this every Sunday for a while, just to get caught up. If you guys like that idea, let me know. All right, I am live. First ever Hither Came Conan live stream. It's kind of my way of trying to motivate myself to start recording some Conan episodes again. This goes okay. Maybe I'll start doing this every Sunday for the time being to get caught up on episodes, because the Hither Came Conan episodes I would like to put out every 2 weeks, just like the Superman Super Show episodes, but on alternate weeks. So Superman Super Show would come out 1 week, and then Hither Came Conan would come out the next week, and then Superman, and then Conan, and back and forth, and all that stuff. May have to switch some stuff around here on my screen because I'm looking away from the microphone to read the show notes. I also can't talk and do stuff like this at the same time. All right, here we go. In a city ruled by seven sinister wizards, Conan discovers... I feel like I said wizards weird. I don't think I did, but I feel like I did. So it's made me pause. And I'll go ahead and change our little thing here so you can see the cover of the comic we're talking about. Oh, good Lord. Hello and welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jeweled thrones of Hyboria beneath its sneakered feet. That sucked. Try that again. I'm going to take a drink of water. Maybe that might help just a little bit. Get some water down in the old pipes. here we go. Plus, of course, there were the roving bands of spandex-clad gnomes. You know, 3 3/4 high. that was terrible. I ran out of crap. Ran out of gusto. 3 3/4 high. Inks by Ernie Chan.
The stuff, it's in my throat. It's just back there, and it's like, bleh.
It was written by... That was a Peter Brady. time for change. I just have to say, it is 12:12 in the PM here where I am live streaming, and I have not been sleeping well over the last few days, and it feels, I'm surprised that the sun is up. It feels like it should be 9 p.m. because I've been up since 3 a.m. So, oh, and Kassar, the shepherd who smuggled Conan into the city. I just left a bit there out of the script entirely. So I'm going to have to enter it in on the fly because that's what us professionals do. Oh, and Kassar, the shepherd who smuggled Conan into the city. Oh, and Kassar, the shepherd who... Sad. I'm just going to do this whole paragraph. Then, because it wouldn't be a Conan adventure without a twist, our barbarian winds up in an arena. In an arena. See, I feel like I said in a arena. It's in an arena. So I'm just going to... Just going to do that line again, just in case. Our barbarian winds up in an arena. That sounded terrible. Our barbarian winds up in an arena. I feel like I did it again. In arena. Ah, I'm going to try a different line. Then, because it wouldn't be a Conan adventure without a twist, our Sumerian ends up standing in the middle of an arena. I'm just fucking keeping it that way. I don't care. Our barbarian winds up in an arena, summoned as a... our barbarian winds up standing in the middle of an arena.
Why am I doing that? I don't know.
William Dahlstead winds up in an arena. Arena. In an arena. Our barbarian winds up in an arena, summoned as the guest of honor by the seven wizards. Boom! Depending on who looked at your book within the comics, because she's within... It's calmer than you did it. William Dahlstead. Yes. Mockle it. I feel like I'll have to... I feel like I'll have to put that sound clip into the episode now.
Mockle it.
Oh, Charles P. pointed out that he's the guy whose Frost Giant's daughter question I lost a few months back. And he says he needs to send it again. Yeah. Because I lost it. It's gone. And I felt really bad about that. I felt pretty crappy. So yeah, send it again. Because I'd love to hear it. You know, when I first started doing the show and I had decided that at some, you know, I would talk about the Titan issues, the new Conan Titan issues as they were coming out. But then he did Frost Giant's Daughter. And I liked Jim Zub's version of Frost Giant's Daughter. And I probably will end up talking about it at some point. But oh my God, how many times is somebody going to adapt Frost Giant's Daughter? And how many times am I going to have to talk about it? William Dahlstead said, thanks for doing this. I love seeing it live. I had fun. And like I said, I decided to do this because I don't want to say it forces me to make these episodes because, you know, I'm a neurodivergent. So there's a lot of reasons why I won't start recording an episode. You know, it's like, if you listen to the Superman Super Show, it's the show I do with the co-host, Ed Moore. We've never met other than communicating through StreamYard. And I've told him before that, you know, it took me a while to get comfortable with him, but there's still, when we schedule a time to do a live stream to record an episode, I've never just canceled because I just didn't feel like socializing. But there, I for 2 or 3 days before the live stream, and then up to when I finally start talking to get him before we go live, I'm trying to come up with reasons to cancel because I just... The idea of socializing, sometimes I just can't do it.
I just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Enough talk.
Great Crom